Welcome to this episode of the Nothing Ventured Primer with me, Arish Shah. In these Primer episodes, we explore the insights and backgrounds of our guests to give you a bit of an idea of what they've been up to and how they got involved in the tech and venture ecosystem. Enjoy. This season of Nothing Ventured is sponsored by Odin. Odin helps angels, VCs, and founders to raise and deploy capital seamlessly. You can structure your SPVs and now run your funds, handle capital calls, portfolio management more smoothly and easily in one place. Founders use Odin to raise their entire round in a few clicks by simply sending investors a link and receiving investments immediately. Odin works with over 5,000 investors and over 150 emerging fund managers and angel syndicates globally. Head to joinodin.com to learn more. That's joinodin.com. Hello and welcome to this episode of the Nothing Ventured Primer with me, Arish Shah. Today, I'm really excited to have with me in the studio, Adam Liska. Adam is co-founder and CEO of Glyphic, an AI co-pilot that helps your sales team sell more with task automation and personalized pre-meeting briefs. Prior to founding Glyphic, Adam was a research scientist at Spotify, later moving to DeepMind, where the first project he got involved in was protein folding. Over the course of his time at DeepMind, he got more and more excited about the potential for diverse applications of large language models, LLMs, and decided to co-found Glyphic, knowing that he could move faster if he was building outside of Google. Adam, really great to have you in the studio with me today.
Hi, Arish. Excited to be here.
Excellent. Well, look, let's dive in. For our audience to get to know you a little bit better, it'd be great to understand what your first job was.
Well, I guess there it depends how far back you want to go. I was a paper boy when I was very young.
Excellent.
But then in real professional career, I was always in software engineering, actually. So my first job after undergrad was in at a stock exchange, kind of building out internal tools that kind of managed inclusion of securities in trading.
Amazing. Big difference between paper rounds and securities and trading,
exactly,
for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
And so what did you do kind of directly before you got into the tech and venture ecosystem?
To be honest, I was there kind of from the very beginning, but I did undergrad in computer science, but already machine learning back then. I was focusing on machine translation, mm-hmm. but that was before the deep learning revolution. So kind of very the old style kind of statistical models apply to machine translation. So translations from one language to another.
So kind of machine learning, machine translation before it was a sexy thing.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I thought it was sexy back then already, but it's become more sexy.
I think this is the point, right? Yeah. Like, I think those that were in it knew it was sexy, knew it was going places, but those that hadn't necessarily had the big kind of like open AI explosion, etc., only came to kind of this AI paradigm shift in the last 12, 24 months, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
And so what triggered your move into founding Glyphic, because you were at DeepMind directly before that, right? Which must have been an incredibly exciting place to be.
Yes, yeah, definitely. That's a tricky question, but it was always something that I wanted to do, start a startup and build a product that's really useful for people. I think, many things kind of came together. People can have different stories, but for me, it was really finding a co-founder, mm-hmm. to start building with. I think that in everyone's journey is maybe the most important thing, because starting a company, it's a lot of work. It gets increasingly more intensive during the time as well. You feel like, this is the most intensive month that I can't go anymore. And then the next month, it's much worse. And so, yeah, I think that kind of finding a co-founder, really important thing. But then I guess being a DeepMind, really fortunate position that we were kind of ahead of the curve in terms of access to technology, access to AI models. Mm-hmm. And kind of we saw what was coming a bit earlier before the main wave, and kind of being in that fortunate position, we saw what was possible and really were excited about the opportunities there and wanted to kind of go out and build. I guess because being in a big tech company, it's always a bit tricky if you want to productize something that's so cutting edge.
Yeah.
Because if you're not put it in a product, you immediately have a billion users, and it's very very difficult to roll it out slowly. And so. Guess that was one of the reasons why we wanted to leave and actually start building outside.
There's two really interesting points that come out of there. I'll take the second one first, almost, which is what you just said about it's harder to build slowly in a larger corporation, which is really interesting because most startups you know, everyone thinks about the famous Facebook move fast and break things, right? But actually what you're saying is, no, you should, in some instances, you should maybe move slow, get the feedback and iterate from there, right? Like, to me, that's really interesting because one would almost expect that, okay, in a bigger organization, you have the resources behind you. You can actually, yes, move fast, but also iterate quicker because you have all of that resource behind you. Is it fair to say that actually for you, as far as Glyphic was concerned, that was almost like, it sounds like that would have been a negative problem?
You can move faster, you have more resources, but at the same time, kind of getting that user feedback, it's more difficult. It's more difficult to ship something to 10 users than, you know, kind of expand that to 100 users, 200 users.
Yeah.
And that's something that we wanted to do, and that was just, it's just more difficult. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And then the other point that came out was, I love a good co-founder story. So, you know, you could presumably have just founded the business and launched yourself, but you actively went out and looked for a co-founder. So tell us a little bit about how that matchmaking kind of happened. How did you find someone?
Yeah, it was actually my colleague at DeepMind. So it was a bit easier from that perspective. We worked together on projects. So kind of we got to know each other working on projects. It could have been potentially also kind of a COVID, you know, side effect where we were working remotely. And then because my co-founder joined DeepMind during COVID, we decided to, you know, start also, let's meet outside of work, just so that he gets to know the team, gets to know also people that he works with in person, actually.
Yeah.
And then somehow, you know, through that, we started talking also about the potential of, you know, starting a startup and the opportunities there.
Are you both technical in that case?
Both technical, yeah.
Interesting. Okay. So, because obviously a lot of, you know, if you look at, like, say, the Entrepreneurs First evolution, they're founder matchmaking now. They've made sure that they have both technical as well as non-technical commercial kind of founders because they realize that is, you know, a dynamic that needs to exist. So are you how does it work with two technical co-founders?
Yeah, so it's definitely different from maybe most startups. I think we're both technical, but at the same time we're both really interested in product and the commercial side as well. And so from that perspective, we're kind of double in both the engineering and the commercial side.
Okay, makes sense. And so what do you think you would be doing if you hadn't founded Glyphic?
I think I would have probably still be at DeepMind. It was a really good place to do research and to work. So probably still there. In terms of kind of the domain I'd be working at in, probably still large language models. What I was really interested in, kind of, it was my side project internally, was around kind of building a research assistant. So an assistant for researchers that kind of ingests all research papers out there, all research discussions, and kind of tries to help you make sense out of it and kind of assist you in your own research. Maybe I would have worked a bit more on that.
That's interesting because Google has, I can't remember what it's called, right? But it has already like a research paper depository or repository.
Google Scholar,
right? Exactly. So that you could have drawn on that. Okay, that's super interesting. And I mean, I can definitely see the value there, right? Like, I mean, at the end of the day, researchers are often like plagued with just having too much stuff out there, having to distill so much information. I guess, you know, a tangential question to that is that essentially what OpenAI or the ChatGPT essentially, and now with the launch of autonomous agents or like more specific agents, is that kind of part of that evolution?
Definitely. I think it's going in that direction, but it's still kind of early days. So if you actually want to have a research assistant, let's say, or an assistant that does a very specific thing, it still involves a lot of manual work as well from developers to actually fine tune things, you know, test things, plug the different systems together in the right way.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's I think we're moving in that direction, but it's still
it's still the problem with hallucination and whether you're getting the right information. You'd almost have to go back and double, triple check what it's actually telling you before you could take it as read that is actually the correct kind of output, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So and I think there with kind of autonomous agents, what's interesting is that we can have kind of two different perspectives there. Either we kind of want to automate things or we just want to augment humans. And what I'm really interested in for the next, you know, I don't know how long, but for the next few years, it's just the augmentation side.
Yeah. So rather than replace, assist, right? So let's talk about Glyphic, right? What does it do? What makes it unique or different? And what does it do better than anything that's out there? And maybe take us through kind of the journey. You know, have you raised initial capital? Have you launched? Where are you at?
Definitely. So yeah, we've been building for the past approximately 1 year. At Glyphic, what we're building is an AI assistant for sales teams or revenue teams in general. Mm-hmm. When you look at, you know, revenue teams, so let's say B2B SaaS sales teams, they kind of sit on so much data that's just sitting there, not doing anything. kind of containing information about, you know, what are their customers, what do they like, what are they, what do they complain about, what kind of pain points customers come to your company, which deals are you closing, which ones are you not closing, should you should you launch in this new geo, should you launch a new product product line. Mm. All this information is there, and it is used by, you know, by leaderships, product leaderships, sales leaderships to make strategic decisions. But you're always relying on subjective and incomplete data, because mm-hmm. you're always relying mm. on your teams to actually put that, structure that data and put it in some kind of internal systems where you can analyze it. So what we're doing at Glyphic is actually doing, plugging into all these customer conversations, even internal conversations, and structuring that data in a way that it could be used by sales leaderships and product leaderships and in general kind of company leaderships to make strategic decisions. Mm. But at the same time, we use this data to augment the kind of day-to-day operations of sales teams. So let's say, you know, I have an initial discovery call with a potential customer. Right after the call, what we do, you get a summary of what was discussed, what were the main pain points, what's the next, you know, action items. What are, you know, similar customers that you may have talked to previously? How did that sales process go? What were maybe some of the objections, how you can address those objections, all these things. We're kind of trying to feed back to sales reps as well, mm-hmm. so that they have that information available when they go into that meeting or when they go into that follow-up meeting.
I mean, from my perspective, it's like I'm sitting here going, yeah, I kind of need that. Because I do that all manually today, right? So as an example, I'll have a discovery call, I'll write out a summary, I'll then augment that summary using ChatGPT, actually, funny enough, and then send that out. But then that data is just, you know, it's there, but it's not being used in any other way, right? It requires me to go back to that data, have a look at it, understand what I was saying, maybe recall a conversation that happened 2, 3, 4 weeks ago, and try and make decisions on that. So I 100% see the value there. And take us through, so have you raised some funding? What's the have you released the product yet, or is it still kind of...
Yeah, so we're already actually in market. We have users. Many organizations using us, many sales teams using us. It was an interesting journey. We started kind of developing in January, shipped to our first design partners in April. Wow. And kind of since then have been scaling, using that feedback, you know, from the initial 10 users, initial 100 users, and building on top of that.
And are those users predominantly sort of corporate enterprise, or is it smaller teams? Like,
right now, smaller teams. We definitely think that eventually, you know, the largest value will be in larger organizations. Mm. But right now, as we're kind of slowly building the capability and everything, we're starting with smaller teams. So still B2B SaaS tech companies.
Yeah.
Maybe let's say late Series A, Series B is maybe our sweet spot right now.
Got it. And has the company raised funding, or are you?
We've raised funding, pre-seed funding, kind of that we're still
angels using. or VCs.
Angels and VCs combination.
Okay. So yeah. Promote. Who the VCs or who's been like the most enthusiastic kind of investment partner that you've brought on board?
Nice. Yeah. So the kind of from the angel side, we've got Mehdi Ghisassi, product lead at Google DeepMind. Yeah. We've got Creator Fund, a London-based VC group, and then the lead was 0.72 Ventures, US-based venture fund.
Okay, excellent. And so just as we wrap up the primer, talk about three trends in the AI space right now, other than the psychodrama that's going on at OpenAI and the revolving door. But what are three trends that you're really excited about in AI?
Yeah, so there's definitely a lot happening. I'm not going to comment on OpenAI because we're still waiting,
to see
what's going to happen there. Yeah. I would say three trends that I really, you know, I'm following now is around evaluation as kind of the models. I think evaluation was the workhorse of the last, few years in the evolution of AI models. And actually, as the models become increasingly capable now, they're also getting much more difficult to evaluate.
Interesting.
Until recently, we were kind of relying on, let's say, non-expert users evaluating the outputs of our models. But now the models are getting so good that it's actually quite difficult. And I think we'll need to kind of revisit some of those things.
So by evaluation, you mean, are they performing, are they outputting as expected, or?
Exactly, are they outputting as expected? Efficiency is, well, I would say more on the output. So are they performing the way they should? What's the difference between these two models that were maybe trained in a completely different way, et cetera? I think we were always had kind of quantitative kind of benchmarks that we used. But now we're kind of, you know, from a user perspective, very often people just kind of look, there's kind of this, let's say, vibes-based evaluation where you just use the model. If it works well for your task, you just go with it. And so I think we'll have to kind of revisit that a little bit over the next next few years.
Sure.
That would be one thing. Another thing is around data. Again, data, another workhorse, I say, of the recent few years. We're kind of running out of the easily available data, and so we need to start looking into other sources of data, I think.
All the unstructured data, essentially.
Unstructured data still, but let's say videos, audio, how can we use that to train even text-based models or multimodal models? It's another thing. And then maybe third would be kind of AI models in action or in this world, performing some action kind of on our behalf. Maybe not everything, but just some actions. I think until recently, when you look at ChatGPT, you would still kind of have a human in the loop.
Yeah.
Talking to ChatGPT, maybe rephrase this, etc. But we're moving to a world where these models can actually perform some basic actions, call APIs, etc. And I think that would be an interesting thing to observe as well.
And I think, like, for someone like me who is non-technical, I mean, I can, you know, write some basic Python and I kind of understand statistics and, you know, but I'm by no means either an expert in data science or in coding. For me, what's really interesting, so I can go to ChatGPT and ask it to build, say, a Python script that can do X, Y, or Z, and then I have to debug that script and try and do other things. And obviously, we've seen now with they have the machine vision; they can take a sketch and essentially write code off the back of it. But I think exactly as you say, for non-technical users like me, that would be the really exciting thing, is like, you know, if you can go into a large language model and say, hey, this is what I need to do, can you write a script calling on these APIs that can pull this information, do X, Y, Z? Because I think this is the really interesting thing about where we're going with AI, is we're going to see a lot of fragmentation or even devolution away from larger businesses with, you know, let's say a Salesforce, for example, which has multiple products. All of a sudden, as an individual business, I can say, well, I don't need that whole stack of products that Salesforce can sell me. Actually, I need this and this. I need it to be far more specific to my business. How do I actually then, you know, can I build that myself, essentially using something like ChatGPT or whatever the equivalent might end up being? So I think that feels like where we're hopefully. So it's almost like the evolution of no code, almost, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So kind of building these tools, putting the things together. Not necessarily always building from the scratch, but maybe you won't need to interact with the underlying tools yourself, because you'll have that kind of language interface to the tools and you wouldn't have to do much yourself.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, again, ChatGPT, I mean, we're recording this, just to be very clear to the audience, the week after the sort of Sam Altman being fired, rehired, whatever it was, from OpenAI, joining Microsoft, coming back again. But I think they just released voice chat, right, with OpenAI, which again is another platform shift, you know, the ability to actually download an app and actually converse with the AI with natural voice rather than text based, which, you know, I would say, as someone that sends a lot of WhatsApp messages via voice, like, for me, that's really exciting.
Definitely. And I think, if you had, for example, Google Assistant at home, let's say the speakers, they're very limited, I think, in terms of if you ask anything, you know, more difficult. And I think we'll have the opportunity to relive that experience, but now properly, actually.
Yeah. So it's like we had the, it's almost like we've moved from the Nokia to the iPhone.
Exactly.
Right? Essentially,
yeah.
That's exactly it. Adam, it's been absolutely awesome having you here with me this morning. I can't wait to get into some deeper topics in the main podcast. For the time being, thank you so much for joining me.
Nice. Thanks a lot. Looking forward to it.